Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop, where we bring you all the news from Washington that the government does not want you to know. I'm your host, former congressional attorney Mark Levine, and here on the Inside Scoop, we try to bring you all the stories that are not being reported too widely in the mainstream press, but that you need to know to understand what's going on in the world and what's going on in Washington. Today's topic is quite important. With the entire world focused on Iraq, we're going to talk in the next hour about Afghanistan. You remember Afghanistan. That's the country that housed the Taliban, of course, which helped Al-Qaeda, and Al-Qaeda set up shop in Afghanistan, and then, of course, on September 11, 2001, murdered 3,000 Americans. You would think that Afghanistan would be a top priority for the administration. After all, the most vicious attack on American soil since probably the War of 1812 by a foreign power started in Afghanistan, and therefore, you would think that that would be the highest priority of the administration. You would be wrong. As has come out clear in Richard Clark's book specifically, we have been transferring resources from Afghanistan to Iraq, and that's why perhaps all the media is focused on Iraq. But what we're going to talk about today is the situation going on in Afghanistan, and my guest is really quite special. Her name is Seema Wali, and she is the president and CEO of Refugee Women in Development, which is an international institution that focuses on women in conflict and post-conflict issues. That includes things like culturally specific domestic violence intervention, prevention programs, and basically helping women out in the developing world. Many of us knew that Afghanistan, long before the attack on September 11th, was the worst country for women in the world. The Taliban that ruled the Afghanistan required women to wear burqas, which is not just a Muslim head dress, but in fact covers the entire body except for the eyes. And women had very few rights. You'll find out more when we have Seema Wali on the line. You can certainly ask her questions. But after the war in Afghanistan, she was invited to actually be part of the new government. She signed a treaty at Bonn, Germany, in the United Nations that set up the Loya Jirga, the traditional Afghani way to choose a leader, and she actually helped form that government. Unfortunately, what she has to say now, and you will hear from her directly about 5-10 minutes, is that the situation in Afghanistan is no longer so good. It's no longer so good for women. It's no longer so good for the Afghanis in general. And it will also be a chance for her to take your calls at 877-57-SCOOP to find out what's really going on in Afghanistan. You know, in December 2002, really just a year and a half ago, and about a year after the Taliban had been driven from power, Don Rumsfeld gave a very upbeat assessment of Afghanistan and its future to CNN's Larry King. He said, quote, "They have elected a government, the Taliban are gone, the Al-Qaeda are gone, the country is not a perfectly stable place and it needs a great deal of reconstruction funds. There are people who are throwing hand grenades and shooting off rockets and trying to kill people. But Don Rumsfeld said, our Secretary of Defense, said there are people trying to kill people in New York or San Francisco. So while it's not perfectly tidy, as he put it, I'm hopeful, I'm encouraged, and I wish them well." Well, a year and a half later, I think it's clear that Don Rumsfeld's predictions are wrong. The Taliban are still a force in many parts of Afghanistan, and indeed so are members of Al-Qaeda, the terrorist group that attacked us. There, we only have about 10 to 15,000 American troops there, compared to 100 to 150,000 in Iraq, 10 times the amount in Iraq, and we're still looking for Osama bin Laden. Indeed, we're still looking for the Taliban leader, Mullah Omar. But the president, Hamid Karzai, of Afghanistan controls basically the capital of Kabul and little else. Local warlords control most of the rest of the provinces, and there's all kinds of problems. Heroin production, opium production is soaring. Indeed, there have been some that have suggested that the United States is actually aiding the drug lords, believing that they are about the only ones left to control the country apart from the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. And a new report by the United Nations Development Program has said that Afghanistan is once again becoming a terrorist breeding ground. So the administration, which gets high marks by the American people, 62% for fighting terrorism, is apparently doing very little to fight terrorism in the country from where it all began, from where not terrorism began, but terrorism against the United States, certainly in September 11th, 2001. When we fought that war, we did not seal the border with Pakistan. Indeed, Richard Clark has said that we let the al-Qaeda leadership go. Richard Clark also said in an interview that he felt that the Afghanistan was viewed by the administration as basically a backwater, military, political backwater, a detour along the road to Iraq, he put it. A detour along the road to Iraq, and Iraq was the war that mattered the most to the president. Indeed, a recent Defense Department study by retired Army Colonel Hy Rothstein, who, and again, this is a Pentagon guy, right? This is a defense guy, and he wrote that we have not won in Afghanistan, that the victory in Afghanistan was not, in fact, a victory at all. We have not destroyed the Taliban. We have not ensured that al-Qaeda can no longer operate there. And, in fact, they are fighting us really in unconventional ways. We're trying to go out there and fight armies, much maybe as the British did the Americans in the American Revolution. But they're fighting unconventionally. They just come out to lay landmines, and they know where we are. We don't know where they are. Just to give you an example, in North Vietnam, there was an American colonel writing a history who told a Vietnamese leader, you know, you never defeated us on the battlefield, to which the Vietnamese replied, that may be so, but it is also irrelevant. In other words, they are winning, even though we can't beat them on the even though we may win on the battlefield, the Taliban is winning. They are bringing the country back to the way it was prior to September 11th. In fact, this report by Rothstein was not published by the Pentagon because they returned it to him and told him to soften its conclusions. Sound familiar? Sound like what they did with Richard Clark? In any case, the Taliban and al-Qaeda, as I said, they can see us. We can no longer see them. We're relying on these warlords, and some of them are double-crossing us. But I think more importantly, we have to look at what's going on with the Afghani people, and that's why I'm very glad to have our special guest, Seema Wali, on the phone with us today. Because it really is going back to anarchy. And one of the reasons why Afghanistan went to the Taliban in the first place was because it was anarchy following the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. And once the Soviets were kicked out, there was no central government. It was all done by warlords. And people felt unsafe. And so they turned to this radical Islamic group, the Taliban, which so mistreated the Afghani people, particularly women. Now, today, I'm not sure it's much better, and that's what we're going to ask Seema Wali about. I'm not sure that the situation for women is any better, or indeed for Afghanis in general. There will be a presidential election in September that's scheduled, but only 10% of the Afghanis are even allowed to vote. They're even, registered to vote, I should say. Only 10% are registered, and some 90% still aren't. It's a very difficult situation. And that's why I'm very, very honored and pleased to have our guest, Seema Wali, on the air with us today to talk about the current situation in Afghanistan. Seema, thank you very much for being on the show.
You're welcome.
I've tried to give a 10-minute summary, but if I got something wrong, I want to hear from the beginning. Did you think my summary was accurate, or was I a little off?
Your summary was accurate, and it covered most of the issues. The major issue for women is security and for the people of Afghanistan, and I think that's something that we have to stress. The fact that all of the warlords are actually violating the rights of Afghan women, and women are saying that this time it's not the Taliban who are committing the human rights violations and committing violence against women. It's basically done by the warlords, and some of them occupy very powerful positions in the current government. And they say this time around, the warlords who are aided and abetted by the United States is violating the rights of the Afghan people and women in particular.
Ms. Wali, I'd like you, if you could, to go through and describe the situation for Afghani women under the Taliban and compare it to the situation today. And before you do that, I want to give the number, if people want to call in and ask you questions. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. It's a toll-free number, 877-57-SCOOP. You can the number, if you don't want the letters, is 877-577-2667. You can also send me an email to mark@radioinsidescoop.com. Ms. Wali is a very important guest. She, in fact, was involved in setting up the current Afghani government. And it's really a terrific to have her on my show, and it's a great opportunity for you to ask her questions. Again, the number is 877-57-SCOOP. So let's start, Ms. Wally, with the Taliban. Tell me about life for Afghani women under the Taliban.
Afghan was subjected to gross human rights violations. In fact, the type of violations that the Taliban committed against Afghan women was really a war, and the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights termed that war as gender apartheid.
Can you give me some examples?
Well, the women were not expected to leave their homes. They were imprisoned in their own homes. They were not allowed to access communities' resources. They were not allowed to go to hospitals. They were turned away from the hospitals, the deathly ill. They were not allowed to work, and they were supposed to wear the burqa, which is the head-to-toe covering, which is actually called the chadari in Afghanistan. Women were committing suicides, and life was really horrendous under the Taliban. And women were rapidly losing hope at that point because they felt that the international community had abandoned them and nobody was coming to their aid.
Okay.
So it was a very dark period in Afghanistan for women. It was unprecedented both in Afghan culture and Afghan history to treat women as less than human beings.
In fact, prior to the Soviet invasion, I believe, did women have close to equal rights in Afghanistan?
This is our sixth constitution that we signed in January of 2004. Our previous constitutions, in fact, the early 1920s constitution was the first constitution which granted equal rights to women. And in fact, very little known fact is known about women, Afghan women who could vote well before American women had gained the right to vote.
Really? Very interesting.
This is in the late 1923. Afghan women had gained the right to vote, and it was a patriarchal government that had given them the right to vote while American women were fighting to gain the right to vote.
Very interesting.
And
now when we took over, when we invaded Afghanistan and defeated, at least we think we defeated the Taliban, immediately we saw lots of wonderful images on television. We saw women removing the burqas. We saw women walking out freely in the streets. At least at that time, now we're talking 2-3 years ago, it seems that that women were largely liberated. Is that true, and is that true today?
Well, the many visits that I had and conversations I've had with Afghan women on the ground, they were euphoric at the initial downfall of the Taliban. They thought they were being freed. But, however, down the line, they're losing hope because they felt that their freedom was linked to the bombing campaign in Afghanistan to justify basically the war against the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, that right now women do not have the freedom that were promised to them. Initially, they had renewed hope that the U.S. and the world community would restore their rights to freedom. But I'm here to tell you that those promises have not been kept for the Afghan people, and especially for the Afghan women.
Well, tell me about, if you would, the situation for women today. Can they leave their homes? Do they feel safe? Can they take off the burqa?
Well, there are advances that have been made that for women, that women can leave their homes. They can participate in government jobs. They can go to school. However, those rights are tempered with security issues, lack of security. Women are wearing the burqa or the chadari because they fear for their own safety. They do not feel safe and secure, especially outside of Kabul, which is our capital city, to leave their homes, to participate in education classes and literacy classes. And they do not have access to employment and to education in the provinces. They have been promised a lot, but they feel that they have the right to expect what was promised to them, but those promises have not been kept. So the status of Afghan women still ranks amongst the worst in the world today.
I've been reading articles that say that outside of Kabul, women may have the legal right to attend school, but most girls are afraid to do so. Particularly outside of Kabul, they fear rape, they fear forced marriages, beatings, suicides. Is all of that true?
Yes, they are very afraid to leave their homes because they are at the mercy of the warlords that control the majority of the Afghan nation, an exception to Kabul and a few major cities. It's the warlords who are involved in illicit drug trading and narco trafficking that they target women, and there is no rule of law in the provinces. The government, unfortunately, in Kabul does not have access to implement the laws that was recently signed and the constitution to guarantee women's safety and security. Therefore, our programs cannot be extended to reach out to women who are running their grassroots communities. And the U.S. government programs that the international NGOs are running, everybody is concentrated in Kabul, and the worst violations that occur against women is in the rural areas, in the provinces, and none of these international organizations or the UN and groups like ours cannot, for fear of lack of security, transfer our programs to the provinces.
Ms. Wally, I'd like to speak with a caller who's hanging on the line. If you want to call in and join this discussion, it's really a terrific opportunity. Ms. Wally is quite an expert in these issues. She's been fighting for Afghan women for most of her life. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. It's a toll-free number. That's also 877-577-2667. You can also send me an email to Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Sima Wally. What's your first name and where are you from?
Hi, this is Bert from Minnesota.
Hi, Bert from Minnesota. What's your question or comment?
Well, first off, it's an honor to speak with both of you. And my question concerns the situation in Afghanistan from a tactical standpoint.
Okay.
Richard Clark talks about how it was going to be an essential part of the invasion to work with the Northern Alliance. And I guess they're more of the warlords now. They talk about how the Taliban is on the rise again, and heroin production is at an all-time high. My first question is, what has your experience been with the post-American Afghanistan? Has it been one in which they've encouraged this sort of thuggish behavior by the warlords?
When you say they've encouraged, you mean American troops?
Yes.
Okay. Ms. Wally, do you think American troops have encouraged the warlords' bad behavior? Ms. Wally?
Cut off.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize.
That's all right.
The question from the listener was, do you think that the American troops have encouraged some of this thuggish behavior by the warlords, that you know, the heroin production, the mistreatment of women? Are Americans encouraging this or helping this in any way?
Unfortunately, the curbing the narcotic trafficking is a very difficult issue to curb. Unfortunately, Afghans contend that the reason that the U.S. went to Afghanistan is not to liberate the Afghan people, but basically to bring down Al-Qaeda, and this is a one-track war that's being fought to bring down Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. It's not to liberate the Afghan people, because they see that very little of the international assistance, security-wise, is filtering down to the Afghan people. Afghans feel that the bargaining power of the warlords is greatly influenced by America's war on terrorism, and they feel that the U.S. is actually arming the warlords and providing them with funds to fight the war during the day against Al-Qaeda, but at night they rape and loot and pillage. And they feel that the warlords are abusing power, and America is unfortunately empowering them by providing them with arms.
So we are aiding the warlords to try to fight Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, but at night when they rape women or in the daytime when they have the drug trade, we look away, we don't do anything?
With Well, yeah, unfortunately, yes. The troops that are fighting the war, the 10,000 American troops approximately in Afghanistan, the majority of them really are not meant to interfere in these issues. They are there to basically bring down Al-Qaeda, and they do not interfere in these issues. However, some of the PRT, the Provincial Reconstruction Teams, will be sent into Afghanistan. But, however, we are hoping that even though it's a piecemeal solution to guarantee the safety and security of the Afghan people, that they might be involved in a very piecemeal situation in the security conditions. Hopefully, they will be deployed soon.
Let me ask you something very specific. Maybe a specific example will help for our listeners. Let's say that there is an accusation of rape or beating or really some gross mistreatment of women, and it's brought to the attention of American authorities. Are they not doing anything, or is it not even being brought to the attention of the American authorities?
That's not the American authorities' mandate. They are mandated only to fight against Al-Qaeda and the Taliban.
So they're ignoring these reports?
They're ignoring these reports, and Afghan women would not dare to leave their homes, especially in the provinces. The American troops are not visible, and they are not deployed in the provinces. The Afghan people cannot reach out to the Americans. There is no rule of law domestically either. So there are actually no venues for the Afghan women who are subjected to these gross violations. For example, in Herat, where a warlord, Ismail Khan, is ruling, there are reports of increased self-immolations of young women who are being subjected to forced marriage. That they, again, the Karzai government does not have any influence in the provinces. It's the warlords that are writing their own laws, and most of these warlords are trained in some of them are trained in the extremist ideology that are alien to Afghanistan. Some of the our justices and the whole judiciary, majority of our judiciary and judges, were trained in the madrasas of the Taliban.
So basically they're Taliban judges rather than looking out for the women.
Unfortunately, that mentality of the Taliban still exists, even among the non-Taliban. I mean, among the warlords who occupy positions of power, they believe in the very extreme practices of the Sharia, which is Islamic law.
We have to go to a commercial, but when we come back, I want to focus on this more. I want to know from Seema Wali why the government of Hamid Karzai, what she thinks of that government and why they can't do more to stop this, and whether what she thinks America can do. If you want to call in, if you want to ask questions, this is a terrific opportunity. It's 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. It's a toll-free number. Call in, ask your question. You can also email me anything you'd like to know at Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. We'll be back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
Step right up, seniors, for it's time to play Medicare Gotcha. As you know, the drug companies have been ripping off us consumers, charging exorbitant prices in the U.S. for medicines they sell elsewhere for half or even a third as much. Because of public outrage over this gouging, Bush and his Congress had to look like they were doing something. So last year they rammed into law the Medicare Drug Discount Program for senior citizens. The program, which begins in June, is a bedazzling, convoluted, privatized shell game rigged with enough trickery to make a county fair flim-flammer blush. Start with the fact that rather than simply stopping the price gouging, as other countries have done, Bush's program subsidizes it, putting some $139 billion of our tax money into the pockets of the drug giants. Then there's the corporate hucksterism built into the new system. If you think phone company come-ons are confusing, wait till you try to compare the dizzying array of private drug discount plans that'll fill your mailbox. Pharmacy chains, drug companies, insurance peddlers, online firms, and others will try to lure you into taking their card. They'll all offer different enrollment fees, different discounts on their list of drugs, and different lists of drugs that they cover. Not only will each company have its own price list, but grab your wallet. Their prices can change weekly. Yes, this means that a company can hook you into taking its card by offering low prices on the medicines you use most often, then, gotcha, jack up its prices the next week. Well, you say, if they do that, I'll just switch companies. Gotcha again. Bush's Law only lets you switch cards once a year. This is Jim Hightower saying, getting the medicines you need ought not to be a game, much less a game rigged to enrich drug industry ripoff artists. It's time for a national health plan in America, based on people's needs, not on drug company profits.
Sometimes it takes an army to help one child. It's the Salvation Army, and it needs your help to send needy children to camp this summer. To donate, call 1-800-SALARMY or donate online at 1-800-SALARMY.org. This army can't help a single child without you.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
We're back here on The Inside Scoop. I'm your host, former congressional attorney Mark Levine. We're talking with Seema Wali. Ms. Wali has devoted herself to issues involving refugee women and women in conflict in the developing world, all around the world. But as an Afghani, her particular focus has been her life's work helping out women in Afghanistan. We've just heard in the first part of the hour the terrific mistreatment of women under the Taliban in Afghanistan. But unfortunately, what we're finding now and what's not being reported much in the mainstream press is the continued mistreatment of women, the continued problems for the Afghani people that, you know, if we're fighting this war not just to stop al-Qaeda, not just to stop the terrorism, the attacks that attacked us, but also if we care at all about the Afghani people, then we've got real problems. Plus, I'm not so sure that you know, even if we don't care about Afghani people, and we should, I would think that the more miserable they are, the more likely they are to turn to groups like the Taliban that provide order, even if it's a pretty cruel order, and we end up losing the war that we fought to begin with. If you want to call in, please do. I appreciate your calls. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. You can also send me an email to Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. Ms. Wali, I want to ask you. You were part of a UN proceeding in Bonn, Germany, to help form what later became the Afghani government. Can you tell me what your role was in that?
I was the only African American delegate, one of the three women, and I was the only woman from the United States that was invited as a full delegate to participate in these peace talks. And I fought very hard to create the Ministry of Women's Affairs at these talks. This was held in Bonn almost 2 years ago.
Tell me this. I mean, those talks eventually led to the government of Hamid Karzai. What do you think of Hamid Karzai? How do you think his government is doing? And why has the ministry that you helped form not succeeded in helping the cause of women in Afghanistan?
Unfortunately, what I can say is that almost 2 years into the formation of the new government, we in the U.S. are rapidly losing momentum to build on the initial goodwill of the Afghan people toward the United States. Hamid Karzai and his government, he is struggling very hard to build a nation. But however, when you examine the politics of aid, it's quite a different matter, because Afghanistan is put on the back burner. The mistakes that were made in 1989 when the Soviets were brought down in Afghanistan and the U.S. walked away, some of those mistakes are being repeated. And these are, we have to understand this, that by committing these mistakes, we are also not guaranteeing the security of the United States, because initially the Taliban and the Al-Qaeda who found safe haven in Afghanistan, it was Afghanistan that generated the kind of terrorism we saw in 9/11, and we cannot take our eyes away from Afghanistan. However, in the, for example, in the supplemental bill, there was money appropriated for a building, nation building. Very little of that money that is pledged is going to the government.
Where is it all going?
The majority, for example, the $4.5 billion that was pledged in Berlin just recently in March by the international donors, and half of that was pledged by the United States. And however, out of that money, does not guarantee the expansion of the security forces, and $12 billion of that funding is going yearly for military operations, for its current operations, not for the expansion of the operations. And this does not include the domestic military spending. So,
well, let me ask you this, because this actually comes, I got an email from a listener who asks what we can do as Americans to, or what we could have done as Americans to prevent what happened in Afghanistan post-invasion. What can America do? Obviously, our money is not going it's going mostly to special operations, as you point out. Where should the money be going?
It is very important that we understand that the power be transferred from the warlords that undermine and undercut the security of the Afghan people and the Karzai government to the Afghan people, to the moderates, who, and especially for building a civil society. We need a comprehensive plan. We need.
Does that require American troops, money, world support?
We require funding. We require capacity building of the political and civil society institutions. The money, the peace dividend transferred must be transferred to the common Afghan person. And we're talking about 60% of our population is women. We cannot leave the women out, and we cannot build the nation simply on less than 40% of its human resources. Unfortunately, we're neglecting that aspect. We have to eradicate narco trafficking, which really is a source of misery for the Afghan people. 60% of the GDP currently is based of Afghanistan is based on illicit drugs.
And I understand that a lot of those illicit drugs are, in fact, what funds the Taliban and the remaining Al-Qaeda cells in Afghanistan. Is that right?
And this is actually, as you said, it is really used for in various ways to purchase arms, to build a trade, to it also is involved in the trafficking of women and children. And the warlords do not, their first priority is maintaining the illicit drugs rather than the guarantee the safety of women.
Okay, but I guess the question of my emailer, and it's a very tough question, is these problems are clearly severe. You've illustrated them very well. What specifically does it take? Does it require more military in Afghanistan? Does it require more money? And if so, who should the money go to? Well, assuming the goodwill, which I don't know that we can assume, but if there were goodwill on behalf of the United States and other nations around the world, what could we do to help the Afghani people retake their own country?
Well, we promised, President Bush promised the Marshall Plan for Afghanistan. And right now, the $700 million is diverted, as reported by Bob Woodward, to Iraq.
I reported that just yesterday, folks. If you don't know this, Bob Woodward reported that $700 million that was supposed to go to Afghanistan was transferred to the war in Iraq without any notice to Congress whatsoever. It sounds to me like it's an illegal transfer, and I hope there'll be more looking into it. But this, to me, is just a symptom of the many things. We've taken troops out of Afghanistan and sent it to Iraq. So I'm sorry for interrupting. Tell us specifically so the money would help.
The fact that the funding would help, and this diversion of funding flies in the face of every Afghan woman whose suffering was invoked to appropriate these funds. when you look at the politics of aid, 64% per person is allocated to the Afghan person versus 336 per Iraqi person, while Afghanistan is a much more devastated country, has the equivalent demographics of Iraq, and also this is where terrorism generated and is being supported. We cannot, we have to remain engaged in Afghanistan. We have to ensure that there are troops sent, the job is done to eradicate Al-Qaeda, the remnants of the Taliban, and to make sure that the drug warlords are replaced by moderate Afghans.
You know, I debate conservatives all the time. I debate Republicans all the time. And often the issue comes up about Iraq. And they say, oh, we have to go into Iraq to save the Iraqi people. So there were no weapons of mass destruction. That's okay. We're there. We're rebuilding democracy in Iraq. And I always point out, but Iraq wasn't our first priority. Iraq didn't attack us. Afghanistan, or at least the Al-Qaeda base in Afghanistan, did attack us. And it seems to me that that, in fact, was a very unstable country, unlike Iraq, which, although ruled by a very bad man, Saddam Hussein, was stable. And Afghanistan, if we desert it, then it seems to me, then we are doing absolutely nothing to stop exactly what attacked us in the first place. And also, it's simply the worst humanitarian place. We have the mistreatment of women is legion. And we went in there, we used all these photo opportunities to show how good we are to the Afghani people. And now it's off the news. It's not even being reported. And it takes a show like mine to really bring it to people's attention. Let me ask you, Ms. Wally, why don't you think the media has been focused on Afghanistan very much? And let me give the phone number one more time out. 877-57-SCOOP. I appreciate your calls. 877-57-SCOOP. Ms. Wally, why isn't the media focusing on Afghanistan right now?
The media has not understood Afghanistan. Unfortunately, all along, it has not listened to the Afghan people. It has basically addressed some of the symptoms of the problem rather than the real the root causes that has fueled this kind of terrorism in the world. Unfortunately, Afghanistan has not the media has not done justice to Afghanistan or to the Afghan people. Hence, it transfers back that kind of responsive reporting reversed back to us. And this is unfortunate. For example, when you look at the spending and nation building in Afghanistan, the question that you just asked, how can you do nation building and build a tolerant society when the spending for Iraq and the spending for Afghanistan represents less than 1% of the bill to build Iraq?
Less than 1%?
Yes.
We're spending more than 100 times in Iraq what we're doing in Afghanistan.
It's 25 times larger, the reconstruction effort in
25
Afghanistan.
25 times.
And you cannot rebuild the nation by not remaining engaged and by not... You have to balance the military and the aid money. I mean, the humanitarian assistance, development assistance has to be balanced.
Ms. Wally, do we need more troops on the ground? Do you think we need more military support?
At this point, we definitely, the Afghans cannot do nation building on their own. The fact that foreign intervention has created this culture of warlordism, that in order to free women, we need to have both aid and we need to have their safety guaranteed by placing more troops and make sure that the Afghan police and National Guard and the army is bolstered. So we don't have those institutions that can guarantee the safety of the common Afghans. At this point, we need a strong infusion of troops, and we need a strong infusion in working in partnership with the Afghan people and involve the Afghan people in making those decisions. Especially the women should be involved in developing their own security plans, and women grassroots organizations, they should be protected.
You know what's interesting is that we've had lots of international criticism for what we did in Iraq. Many of our normal allies, countries like Canada and France and Germany, have been very upset by what we did in Iraq. I think it's worth pointing out that all of them supported us in Afghanistan. In fact, I don't know really of any country that has resisted aid to Afghanistan because I think most realize that whatever we've done in Iraq, what we're doing in Afghanistan, or what we're trying to do, maybe failing to do, is just. And I guess my question is, how do we get other nations, to help us in the cause? Is this just a question where presidential leadership could come and help convince other countries to help us as well in Afghanistan?
Well, the expansion of the security forces is something we have called for a long time, and the expansion beyond Kabul of the security forces requires funding and commitment by the U.S. and the international community. The ISAF, the International Security Forces, operate under NATO, and we need to make sure that those forces are expanded in the provinces. We cannot take our eyes off that what we are in Afghanistan basically to help the Afghan people. And we need to make sure that the life is improved for the common Afghan person. And that is not something what we can say right now.
We have to go to commercial break. If you want to call in, and please do, the number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. We always appreciate your calls here. If you want to email me, the email is mark, M-A-R-K, at radioinsidescoop.com. When we come back, I want to explore the role of Pakistan. As little as Afghanistan is talked about, perhaps even less, the country of Pakistan is talked about, and yet Pakistan has played an intimate, very important role in Afghanistan throughout its history, and not always a positive one, in fact. And I'd like to explore that question when we come back after these messages.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Female plaintiffs in a class action sexual discrimination lawsuit against airplane maker Boeing got some additional ammunition for their claims recently from the company itself. A court order related to the lawsuit forced the company to release more than 20,000 pages of internal documents, including reviews of salary and wage scales conducted by Boeing. At least one of these definitively concluded that a gender-based wage disparity existed at the company. In its defense, Boeing says the reports do not demonstrate evidence of discrimination, but rather a good-faith attempt on the part of the company to track down and eliminate unequal pay. Preliminary hearings on the class action suit, which currently covers close to 5,000 women employed by Boeing in Kansas, will begin in May.
According to anonymous comments made by U.S. Department of Labor officials, proposed harsh overtime regulation changes, initially predicted to cut off 8 million people from overtime pay protections, will now be softened. The new overtime rule changes will still cut the number of workers receiving overtime pay, but would preserve eligibility for most white-collar workers earning up to $100,000 a year, as well as for police, firefighters, and other first responders. If enacted, this will be the first time an upper salary limit is set. David Cohen is assistant to the president at the Department for Professional Employees, AFL-CIO.
Inflation could quickly raise everyone to the $100,000 level, and over time could be a major problem. It's an automatic conveyor belt taking people away from overtime pay protections.
While Cohen and the AFL-CIO are pleased their efforts are having an impact, they're still pushing for the Harkin Amendment, which would preserve overtime for all workers.
Grocery giant Kroger will make a $116 million payment to two of its competitors, Safeway and Albertsons, before the end of the month. It's part of a dubious agreement the three chains entered into to break a strike of grocery workers in Southern California. Under the deal, Kroger, whose stores were not picketed as much as Safeway's and Albertsons, agreed to split revenue with its rivals in order to offset the loss of sales by the picket lines. Meanwhile, California's Attorney General continues a probe into the legality of the agreement, which may violate antitrust law.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. You'd better have extra money to burn, at least in your engine, because gas prices hit another record high this week for the fourth week in a row. According to the Government Energy Information Administration's weekly survey, motor fuel increased by 2.7 cents from last week to a national average of $1.81 a gallon. That's 29 cents higher than this time last year. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
We're back here on the Inside Scoop. This is your host, Mark Levine, bringing you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. and bring you all the news stories that the mainstream media is not reporting. Today we have a very important news story. It's what's going on in Afghanistan. And it's really one that suffers from lack of media attention. We went into Afghanistan just 2 years ago, following September 11th. President Bush took his main plan, which was to go in Iraq. That was a plan that, according to Richard Clark, Paul O'Neill, and now Bob Woodward, was planned in the first 10 days of the Bush administration. And Bob Woodward's book, as well as O'Neill's and Clark's, all three point out that the Bush administration was quite reluctant to take its eye off Iraq and to move into Afghanistan. But, of course, we were attacked by al-Qaeda, which has its base in Afghanistan, and so the administration did decide to go into Afghanistan. But the question now is, what is it doing? What's happening in Afghanistan? And it looks like, again, as Richard Clark pointed out, as Bob Woodward pointed out, as Paul O'Neill pointed out, the administration is just ignoring Afghanistan and focusing on Iraq. If you want to call in, the number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. If you're listening on Radio Power, I know that we web stream through Radio Power. They are supported entirely by your listener donations. And take time and give a click right there on the website and give a donation. That's what helps keep this show alive. And again, we appreciate your calls. 877-57-SCOOP. It's a very important topic because the administration, when Richard Clark said, is not focusing on the war on terror, it's focusing on Iraq instead, they were shocked, the administration. They said, no, Iraq is part of the war on terror. But when we get to really the terrorism against us in Afghanistan and we look at its causes are the misery and oppression of the Afghani people. Indeed, they went to the Taliban originally because of all the anarchy and control by various warlords. And my guest today, Seema Wali, who is head of Refugee Women in Development and has actually been working to help Afghani women for decades, she is telling us that it's really becoming quite a dangerous situation. I want to thank you again, Ms. Wali, for appearing on my program.
You're welcome.
Tell me this. Pakistan has played a very important role. Again, I'm not sure it's always positive, but why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about the history of Pakistan's involvement in Afghanistan and then what it's doing today?
Unfortunately, Pakistan has played a duplicitous role in intervening in the Afghan affairs. As you know, the Taliban was created initially by the Pakistan in support from the CIA. And the Taliban were a monster that were created for Afghanistan, unfortunately, and we saw what the Taliban amounted to over the years. And the first government, the government of the Taliban, were recognized initially by Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, and United Arab Emirates. Unfortunately, Pakistan has been part of the problem. They're not the solution. And they are a duplicitous ally, so
now
Afghans
Bush,
are very concerned.
Bush says that Pakistan is our friend and is helping us in the war against terrorism.
We are very concerned about that role because where the Afghan terrorists received their training in Pakistan in the training camps, and a large majority of the Taliban attended the Pakistani madrasas, which is the seminary schools. Also, that they are involved in the illicit drug trade. The production plants are based in Pakistan, and this reaps lucrative funds both for Pakistan and for the drug lords. We are very concerned about the role of Pakistan. However, with the creation of the Karzai government, it has committed its support, but Afghans are worried about the role of Pakistan. And there are other countries who have intervened, but unfortunately, throughout the process of the war, even until now, Afghans contend that Pakistan has played a very regressive role and a very duplicitous role.
Has Saudi Arabia also intervened in Afghani?
Yes, Saudi Arabia basically provided the lion's share of the resources that went to the extremists and in supporting the Taliban.
You know, it's amazing that George Bush is such good friends with Prince Bandar that Prince Bandar will even lower gas prices for his campaign. But we're not talking about the fact that our wonderful ally, and I mean that in all sarcasm, that our wonderful ally, Saudi Arabia, has actually been aiding the very people that attacked us on 9/11. I want to go to a caller now. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Seema Wali. What's your first name? Where are you from?
I'm Ed from New York. And I was shocked to learn from Seema Wali that in the 1920s, women had the right to vote in Afghanistan, and they had all those other rights. But I have two questions for her. First, what can we do as Americans here in the United States to eradicate this problem or to get rid of the problems that the warlords are causing? And two, what is going on in Europe to help Afghani women?
Ms. Wali?
Well, the first question is that we need to make sure the safety and security is guaranteed, and the kind of support that is given to the warlords and the arms should be curbed. There should be a totally different strategy to balance that aid to free Afghanistan from the culture of warlordism, because unfortunately the U.S. is the warlords are fighting along the war with the U.S., so we need to curb that.
Let me ask you: would more aid, Ms. Wali, to the Karzai government, would that help curb the power of the warlords?
It's the balancing of the aid. The aid must go directly to the Afghan people, also to build the civil society.
How does the aid go directly to the Afghan people and skipping the government and skipping the warlords?
Well, that's where there have been mechanisms in other countries. For example, when we are building a civil society, you're talking about building the political institutions of the government, as well as the civil society and in the independent.
So would these be non-government groups?
Non-governmental organizations which have operated throughout the process of the war and have provided these services, even during the time of the Taliban, clandestinely.
Are there non-government agencies and organizations that we can support that would help?
There are many, and my organization is working extensively with them. We have not received the kind of funding that we need that is requested by the Afghans to work with them, to train them, to build their capacities, to take matters in their own hands.
Well, how would we, if somebody who is listening to this program wanted to help out your organization, how would we do that?
My organization, you can email me as to how to contact me at refwid, refwid, at Errols, errols.com. We also have a website, www.refwid, refwid.org.
Let me ask one more question, if I can, and I'm sorry for interrupting you. But is anything being done in Europe to help support Afghani women?
Europe is far better. It is aiding the civil society institutions, the Afghan people themselves, and is helping build up their capacity so that when the international community ups and leaves to attend to another crisis, that the Afghan people are empowered to take matters in their own hands and provide the education, the human services that is necessary. The government alone cannot do it. And sometimes bureaucracy hinders the kind of quick responses that the independent organizations, nonpartisan organizations can provide in this arena.
Thank you very much for your call, Ed. I want to ask you, Ms. Wali, about a vote that's coming up in September. I understand it's the first free election since the Taliban, but the reports I've seen have shown that only 10% of the Afghanis are even registered, and one report I read says that many of the women have said they'll vote for whoever their husbands or sons tell them to. What do you think are the prospects for that election succeeding?
Unfortunately, we are very concerned about those elections. As you know, it was postponed precisely because security conditions were such that or people in the provinces, women especially, could not come out to vote. And once again, I must alert you that 60% of the, over 60% of the Afghan population is women. And one of the things that needs to happen, the fact that Afghan women especially are suffering from 80% of illiteracy, they need to have education programs, literacy programs, and training programs to inform them about the processes to reach out to them. Unfortunately, the logistics and the security is such that women are left out of the process, and I'm very concerned about the fairness and the equity of the elections that will be coming up.
Do you think the vote should be postponed, or do you think it needs more election observers? What can help make the vote better?
We need to make sure that we reach out and inform the women in the provinces about the their voting rights and about the election processes. They are totally uninformed about what is going on in the capital.
What's interesting to me is that the vote was scheduled in September, just 2 months before our election here in the United States. Do you think that that had a political motivation?
Afghans contend that our election and our processes to nation building is really sped up, and the building of the military, of the road that is used for military operation, the highway between Kabul and Kandahar, was sped up. The $180 million highway was again precisely to show prior by the November elections that Afghanistan can be invoked as a success.
So this is all window dressing. The Bush administration trying to show Afghanistan as a success just before the elections, and then I guess it falls apart afterwards?
Unfortunately, we cannot speed up these processes. Nation building has to be a step-by-step and equitable process.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Ms. Wally, for spending the time with us to give all this information. It's very important that people know what's going on. It's not a topic that's gotten a lot of media attention. And I want to thank you again very much for coming onto my show.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You know, there's a lot of stories that come out in dribs and drabs in Afghanistan that really I think people don't really notice. For example, I read in the New York Times just a week ago, a provincial capital in Afghanistan is seized by a warlord's forces. General Abdul Rashid Dostum seized control of the capital of Faryab province in northern Afghanistan. Now, that's imagine if that were to happen in Iraq. In Iraq, we had al-Sadr, who has basically blockaded himself in a mosque, but he hasn't taken over an entire province. You know, the administration, when accused by Richard Clark and others of putting Iraq ahead of Afghanistan, said, oh, no, absolutely not. Afghanistan definitely was our first priority, and yet we see time and time again diversion of resources. And what does this do? It makes the Taliban stronger. It makes the warlord stronger. It makes al-Qaeda stronger. It makes Osama bin Laden stronger. The people in Afghanistan turned to the Taliban precisely because there was no order in their country. And what you heard from Seema Wally is that this is a country that very much wants U.S. aid, wants U.S. support. The Iraqis, many of them want us out. But the Afghanis very much want us there. They want us to help, and we're not helping them. So here we are, helping a country that doesn't want our help and not helping a country that does. And, of course, this is the country that, not due to any fault or malevolence of the Afghani people, but simply due to the anarchy there, happened to have a brutal regime, the Taliban, that so mistreated women and also aided al-Qaeda, which attacked us. You know, I another article in the L.A. Times, it just came out yesterday, an Afghan province has banned women from performing on TV and radio, declaring female entertainers un-Islamic. This is a ban in Nangarhar, an eastern province that's heavily patrolled by U.S. troops looking for Islamic terrorists. And basically, it was a very tough decision by Kabul television. They showed an old tape of a popular female singer by the name of Parasto. And just simply putting on this old tape of this very popular female singer has caused bans for women performing in eastern Afghani provinces. Now, I thought we were there to help the people. I thought we were there to help Afghani women. The Bush administration, you watch, as Seema Wally pointed out, right before the election, they're going to parade Afghanistan as some success. It's really not a success. And I hope that we've brought that very clear to your attention today. Hey, look, tomorrow is also a very interesting show. We've gone from the important subject of Afghanistan to what many may call the ridiculous subject of Howard Stern. And yet, even those of us like me who don't like Howard Stern very much, recognize that it's very crucial that the government not censor programs, that not censor programs like Howard Stern. We're going to talk tomorrow all about the FCC crackdown on radio, how it came out of the Janet Jackson Super Bowl fiasco, and really what the administration is doing to cut down on your First Amendment rights. Are shows like my own periled? Or, you know, should people be able to say that Howard Stern shouldn't be on the air? Or is this just a choice that people make? Hey, tune in tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern, 2 Central, 1 Mountain, and noon Pacific. And tune in. I think it'll be a very interesting show. Not as important as what's going on in Afghanistan, perhaps, but still important nonetheless. And if you want to help the Inside Scoop, you can do so. You can advertise. We very much support our sponsors. Just go to advertise at RadioInsideScoop.com. Indeed, all the information is right there at your fingertips at RadioInsideScoop.com. This is Mark Levine signing off. I'll see you tomorrow here on the Inside Scoop.